Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
And a pleasant good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Fans in the Pro. My co-host, Deuce McAllister, and today we'll be talking with Jeff Hundley, the Sugar Bowl CEO, getting ready for New Year's Day, Notre Dame in Georgia, and at 5:20, former Saints Super Bowl champ, part of the SEC network analyst, Roman Harper, and I can't wait for that because that is classic Deuce, Roman Harper, and Deuce joins us as well. Hello there, my friend. Where are you calling from today?
I am somewhere in California, Panoma, California, yeah. I believe is the correct, out at the L.A. County Fair area, possibly. I think that is correct.
Yeah. Well, you know, this has happened frequently when you were doing the SEC games. It hasn't happened in a while, so it's all good.
Well, some of that's by choice as well. So, some of that's by choice as well. I had some opportunities to call a couple college games, but man, with the family and their obligations and wanting to be a part of that, it had to make sense for me. And so, I've enjoyed obviously being in studio with yourself, and then when we were able to get out to a couple of remotes, always loved that. But I mean, this was a tournament that one of my my kids were in, and so had an opportunity to come out and just to see it. I've seen some of our training camp sites. I'll put it like that. And so I didn't venture all the way into Orange County, et cetera, but it's been good.
So this is – and we talked about this a little bit pre-Green Bay, that it was just kind of unfamiliar territory. There were three games left, and quite frankly, the way the Green Bay game went, and then it was Christmas, and then you're kind of right into Vegas, which I'm fine with. But, you know, Derek Carr's out. We kind of knew that. Alvin Kamara, Eric McCoy, Lucas Patrick. And so, I mean, I don't – tell me where this team's head is. What are they doing? What are they thinking?
If they're hurt, you're probably not going to go. That's probably where you're at, you know, and it's really obviously the player always wants to play. But from an organizational standpoint, how can I save this player from himself? I mean, because Derek, AK, even Eric and Lucas, those guys want to go. I mean, it's not like, hey, you know, we're out of the playoffs, so I don't want to play. That's not the mentality. I mean, because, look, you train too hard. I mean, and people they realize it, but you start in March for training for a season, and you train for at least 20 games, possibly 22. How many games have those guys been able to participate in? You know, just take Derek, take Eric. You know, both of them miss what, 7, 8, yep, 9 games. Yep. You know, roughly. And so you think that they sacrifice as much time away from their family to not have the opportunity to compete? And then here's the other part. Every player, nearly, let me put it this way. Nearly every player will tell you, oh, man, I'm going to play for 10 years. I'll play for 10 years and then I'll retire on my own. You know how many players get to walk away on their own? Very, very few. So if you've got an opportunity to play, you play. And for this team, though, they're going to try to hold those players back from themselves. You are trying to win a football game, but at the same time, you're trying to evaluate players. You know, you're trying to evaluate and see who could be a part of the future. And, you know, Coach Darren Rizzi, he's in evaluation mode because not only from a player standpoint, but he wants to be the full-time head coach. And so he is trying to win, but it's tough when you don't have those Pro Bowl and All-Pro players available.
Right. You don't have – Olave's questionable. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, again, questionable. And so you just, it's such a, you know, one of the things that Spencer Rattler talked about, who will start on Sunday, is that, you know, the big difference between those three games that he started in the middle part of the season when Derek was out was that, hey, man, I got the beef in the middle back. Well, he didn't have that again, you know, without Eric and without Patrick. So it'll be, man, this is just tough sledding. And it is evaluation for, you know, real game rep evaluation. But you just kind of wonder offensively, where does it come from? I mean, hopefully maybe we see more Kendre Miller. You know, I don't know. It's just you just wonder where offensively things can happen against a Raider team, you know, that comes in after a win, but they had lost 10 straight, and so they beat Jacksonville. So it's just it's weird.
Well, it's definitely weird, but it's not something that a few teams have been through it already. You know, some teams have been out for a while. Even, you know, you talk about the Raiders have been in evaluation mode, but they're still trying to win games. And, you know, the question becomes, did they hurt themselves for the number one pick just because you did beat Jacksonville? And for the Saints, I don't think that the Saints can technically probably get up to top five.
I don't know if I can get in top seven, to be honest.
That's what I mean. And right. So, you know, for the Saints, you're probably going to be locked in anywhere from maybe 8 to 11 or 12, mm-hmm. You know, and that's probably where you are over these next two games. And, you know, you may be, even if you win out the next two, you may be stuck where you're at anyway, you know.
And it'll, if you lose out the next two, which I'm not advocating, don't get me wrong, but if you did, you don't even gain. You don't. It's like the one freak year where losing, like they were going to pick probably 10th pre-Green Bay, lose to Green Bay, I'm still probably picking around 10th. So it's
and that's what I meant. That's exactly my point. Yeah. I mean, and so losing normally would say, oh, you lost your last two, you move up three spots, four spots. This year, I don't know. It'll come down to tiebreakers and some other rules. And so I'm about winning anyway. I don't like to lose. So, you know, let's see if we can get a W on Sunday.
So the Raiders beat Jacksonville, as you talked about. Aiden O'Connell, we will be seeing, and we know that the Saints have struggled. I wouldn't say just over across the board, but there have been times, you know, when you face these elite tight ends, and they're going to – this is Charlie's guy, Brock Bowers. He's a rookie out of Georgia, but I was talking to Coach Rizzi today. I mean, he's not a rookie anymore, right? He's caught 101 passes. He's got 1,000 yards. This is a unique – physical specimen from a team who drafted a tight end in the second round the year before with the 35th pick. So, you know, right there at the edge of the first round. So they go, man, you see a guy like that, that doesn't come around very often, but he's impressive.
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, for him, he's a rookie on the side of his name, but, you know, the way that he plays even early in the season, you could tell that he was far more advanced and a tremendous player, you know, one that should be all-pro very, very soon in this league. And so, you know, for me, you have to kind of treat him like I would do a receiver, and at times he's going to be bracketed, at times he's going to be doubled. You know, I'm not going to give him free access. I got to hit him. I can't let him off the line of scrimmage freely, and you know I got to give him some treatment that normally a rookie wouldn't get. And he's an inline tight end; he can go out and flex. And so you've got to know where he's at all times, though.
What would you like to see more? Because it is kind of evaluation situation from Spencer. Like, and I think Coach Rizzi put it best, and you talked about it as well. It's like I could cut up a tape, like a resume tape for Spencer, and you go, whoa, man, it's impressive. And I can also cut up out of the same game the not so good, and you'd go, "Whoa, that guy, he needs a lot of work." I mean, it's that opposite ends of the spectrum, right?
Yeah, definitely. And so you talk about consistency, you know, and so there's opportunities to take the easy play. Every play doesn't have to be the home run play. I think that's one thing that you have to understand as a quarterback. It's about staying on schedule. And staying on schedule means no loss of yardage, no loss of downs. It's okay to have a negative play that I don't lose yardage because at the end of the day, if even at worst, if I have to punt, it's not giving up yardage where now my defense is playing on its heels because the other team has the ball on the plus end of the field. And so it's little things like that, making sure that I always have 11 in the huddle. Last week we had a 12 man in the huddle. I can't say this is all on Spencer, but, you know, it starts with the quarterback. And so, hey, we've got 11 in the huddle. We don't have any delay of game penalties. We don't have to call a timeout because we can't get the formation in or we can't get the play in, and we can go to the line of scrimmage and have a successful play where I can go to the next play, get into the red zone, and even high red, take care of the football. And so I think that's probably rule number one, no turnovers, you know, particularly from the quarterback, and I'm not putting my teammates in bad situations, but no turnovers. In the red zone, I want 7. I don't want 3. I want to be able to take the points. Check down is okay. Then I can, you know, be able to go to the end zone or the home run throw. And understanding my alerts, I think that this team will still try to get after you because they've seen that you haven't handled the pressure well. So where are my alerts? You know, is it a hot throw? Is it something that I want to check into to be able to get the football off? You know, not taking sacks, not staying on schedule. So all of those things, it's a lot, but that's a quarterback. That's the job of the quarterback. And some of it, I don't want to call it day one because you're a young quarterback, but some of it is day one. I mean, I know personnel, so to understand that I got 11 in and out of the huddle, that shouldn't even be a thing that crosses my mind. But I'm thinking about those other 10 to 12 things I just told you as well. So sometimes that may slip up. So it's playing fast, playing on schedule, and then doing all those other 10 things that I just told you.
No, to me, and you talked about it, you know, was the turnovers and – you know, they come in bunches. I get all that. But, you know, we've watched this thing tick its way down, tick its way down, tick its way down to where now the Saints turnover differential, they're -1. I mean, they were, you know, first two, three, you know, say that first four games, you know, plus eight, five, six, yeah, seven,
you were plus eight.
Yeah.
You were plus eight.
And we have watched it just tick, 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 tick to where they're -1, which is 16th. By the way, the flip side of that is the Raiders are -17 in the turnover differential. Wow.
Yeah, that shows you why you're picking in the top three. Here's something though, Mike. Think about this. You go back to the not only Green Bay game, but go back to the Washington game. Think about the fumble right there that Tyron causes, and we can't scoop that one. Go back to the Green Bay game. Think about the interception that Bink has right there, and we can't squeeze that one. Or just some of the tip passes that we're close, but we just can't get there. This Saints team probably should be +8. They are a +8, +10 type defense. And right now, you know, in offense, obviously you're responsible for your turnovers as well. Right now, you're not there. And I could probably easily say that if you are +8 +9 right now, then you have at least 4 more wins. I feel confident in saying that. If you are +8 +9 right now, you have 4 more wins.
I mean, it's the difference, you know, in a lot of things, you know, 8-7, 5-10. I mean, it doesn't take much to flip things around. All right, going to take a break. Come back. We'll talk more with Deuce. We'll also have Jeff Huntley around. I'm going to remind everybody that we invite you to ring in the new year at NOLA New Year's Eve Fireworks Show. Join us for that spectacular fireworks light up the midnight sky right along the New Orleans Historic Riverfront, East and West Bank. Start your New Year's Eve celebration with the All-State Sugar Bowl Parade that rolls through the quarter at 2 p.m. And afterwards, explore French Quarter restaurants, bars, and shops until 9 p.m. and the New Orleans Eve concert on Decatur in Jackson Square, Rock with Tank and the Bangas, Bonorama, and more until the midnight Florida lead drop and the world-class fireworks display. Then, New Year's Day, 91st annual All-State Sugar Bowl Football Classic, the Notre Dame Fightin' Irish, Georgia Bulldogs kick off at 7:45. No better way to usher in 2025 than the traditional Florida lead drop and the internationally acclaimed NOLA New Year's Eve fireworks show produced by the Crescent City Countdown Club in partnership with the Mayor's Office of Cultural Economy and the New Orleans Tourism and Cultural Fund, and presented by New Orleans & Company, the Allstate Sugar Bowl, the Berger & Teller Families, French Quarter Festivals, Inc., and J&M Displays. All of that next week. And we'll talk about the Sugar Bowl next with Jeff Hundley, Sugar Bowl CEO. This is Fans in the Pro. Back after this on WWLAMFM.com. Always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back to Fans in the Pro. My host, Deuce McAllister. We are in the College Bowl season, and already a College Bowl game in the books. Navy, the midshipmen, how about this season? They go and beat Oklahoma 21-20. They finish the year at 10-3. So big win for Navy. Congrats to them and really all of the service academies who played such good football this year. But our game in town next week will be the All-State Sugar Bowl, and the CEO, Jeff Hundley, joins us now. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mike, Deuce, great to be with you this afternoon.
The 91st, you know, no matter who it would have been, it would have been great. But Notre Dame and Georgia, that's pretty big. That's going to be a big event. You'll be the final game on January 1st of the four. There's one on the 31st, and then bang, bang, boom, the Rose in the middle, and then the Sugar Bowl at night. So I couldn't ask for a better kind of display, if you will, for the Sugar Bowl for the 91st year.
Yeah, I said it previously, you know, we couldn't have drawn it up better at the start of the year to wind up with, you know, two big brand name programs, two that have had a lot of success in recent years, two that have great fan bases. They're great television draws, just straight across the board. You know, there's every reason to love this matchup, and, you know, we're excited for it. We're just a couple of days away now from the teams arriving on the 29th.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you from, you know, the Sugar Bowl, from what it means and what it does to the community. Talk about a little bit about some of the things that you guys have planned throughout leading up to the game, you know, just some of the work that you guys will do in the community.
Sure. Well, it's a different day in the era right now, Deuce, in that, you know, the schools are looking at this more like a business trip. So we're confined to our entertainment with the teams in the team hotel. So we're never going to back down from a challenge. So we decided that we're creating a true New Orleans experience, even though it's in a ballroom at the Hilton and the Marriott while the teams are in town. We understand that they're here to play a serious game that has consequences towards the national championship, and we're going to help them, you know, do that. But at the same time, we want to feed them, show them the New Orleans culture, and have a good time. You know, for the fans, we're doing our annual New Year's parade, and that's going to be a big event, as it always is, as it goes down Decatur Street on the afternoon of December 31st. And then, of course, we have our big fan event at Champion Square on game day. You know, beyond that, you know, with the success that we've been able to have, you know, over 90 years with the football game, it's allowed us to do some things in the community, and, you know, I could talk forever about those, but we're really proud recently of, you know, we've worked together with the College Football Playoff Foundation to provide almost $5 million in the support of Orleans Parish Public School teachers. What we had found was the entire teacher workforce was turning over every 3 years, and, you know, you can't do anything positive when that's taking place. And so we've really put together a program. And I'll be the first to admit, you know, we're not the experts in this, but we knew where to find experts. And New Schools for New Orleans and the College Football Playoff Foundation helped us develop a program that recruits, then recognizes and retains quality teachers. And we've already seen some percentage point increases in what we've been able to do there. We're working with in advance of the Super Bowl right now working with Nike to replace the field out at Joe Brown Park, which is a facility that 12 years ago we worked with Drew Brees and Nike to completely renovate that facility to the tune of $10 million because it had never been repaired after Hurricane Katrina. So, yeah, we like to be a good corporate citizen and feel like we're doing a good job with it. And as long as the football game continues to produce, hopefully we'll be able to do those sort of things for years to come.
So tell me about the landscape. I mean, it just feels like it's changed so fast. I mean, we talk about this with college coaches and athletic directors, but for like the bowl situation. So the finals this year are in Atlanta, Hard Rock Miami for 26, and I believe Vegas and Allegiant for 27. So the Superdome hosted the semifinal last year, quarterfinal this year. And I think, is the Sugar Bowl a quarterfinal next year as well?
Yes, we are a quarterfinal next year, and we've been in discussions with the college football playoff about a six-year potential extension after next year that would allow us to be either a quarterfinal or a semifinal game every year, which is huge to us because the unintended consequence of the college football playoff was when you're not a playoff game, you've got more players opting out, and when the players opt out, the fans opt out. So you can't sell tickets. The economic impact that we like to have for the city, which has historically averaged around $200 million every year, you know, that's lessened when that happens. So we think we have a fighting chance if we're a playoff game every year. And then, you know, furthermore, sort of letting the cat out of the bag, but not really. You know, we've been in talks with the playoff about hosting a potential national championship game a couple of years from now down the line. And, you know, we're busy, you know, trying to negotiate a deal that we think, is good but that will bring the game here. What we found, you know, we hosted back in 2020 with the LSU Clemson game, and cost of hosting the same event 8 years later, we projected to be almost double what they were then. We, as an organization, you know, put $6 million of our own money towards the support of that 2020 event. And we feel like we'll have to do the same in order to bring the next one here, which we're willing to do. But at the end of the day, we're going to need the local community and the business community to help us, you know, going forward, because we can't continue to do that indefinitely, you know, put that sort of money out of our own pocket going forward, because there's not the way that works is the playoff keeps all the money. We don't make any of it back. We just have to raise the money to pay the expenses. And that's what we're in business for, and we'll do it. But it's certainly not an ideal business model.
Yeah, and that's what I was really going to ask when you're just hearing some of that, and you know that's rough numbers from what 4 years ago, and so potentially another 4 or 5 years, what would that number look like? And you know, you talked about the local community stepping up, but even possibly having the state to have to step in too, because from a economic impact, I think that should bode well for not only local New Orleans, but you know the metro region, but you know, to showcase the state as well. Is that not correct?
Absolutely. You know, you hit the nail on the head there, Deuce. With you know, when we host a national championship game, the viewership is, you know, 25 million plus. That's basically an infomercial for the city and the state. And the event itself draws, you know, it's an over $200 million economic impact, which means, you know, a little over $20 million in direct tax revenue. And when we're a playoff game every year, that tax revenue is coming every year. And it's important that people understand that. It's a good return on investment, you know, when you help us out. You know, that money is coming right back in a big fashion to the city and state in the terms of tax dollars. And then, you know, the businesses, the hotels, the restaurants, the taxi drivers, the Uber drivers, what have you, everybody's, you know, it's a good for everybody when that happens. But, you know, if you've been paying any attention at all lately to college athletics, just about every decision now is being made about money. And that's not historically been where we've been our strongest, you know, in here in New Orleans. So again, we're reaching out and we redefine what local means. We're talking to people everywhere from Gulfport and Biloxi to Lake Charles and all points in between, trying to solicit help. And we've had some people step up and help us, but it's going to take a lot more if we're going to be able to sustain this thing long term. Again, I feel like, you know, we run a lean and efficient operation in comparison to the competition. So we don't have to match everybody dollar for dollar, but we do have to do better than where we're at right now. And I think, you know, based on the plan of action that we've had in place for the last year, the response has been positive, and hopefully that'll continue, you know, as we move ahead in the months and years to come.
Well, I agree, and my final question is kind of just that. I think there are people out there probably that go, oh, yeah, it's a rotation. We'll get the national. You know, it's not like it. It's a completely different situation, and you've talked about that LSU game. That was January 13th of 2020, because we began the renovation of the Superdome on January 14th. So in that time frame, so now here you are hosting this year with a brand new Superdome, and it's, you know, for the world to see. And then a month later, the Super Bowl will do the same thing. So two important foundational pillars, the Allstate Sugar Bowl and the Super Bowl for 2025, should get this city and state off to a really good start, because it's important that it goes both ways. The Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation. These things just don't happen. They happen with a lot of hard work from a lot of people.
Yep, and, you know, this will maybe put it in a nutshell. When the business deal was offered to the bowl for a six-year extension for participation in the college football playoff, and I say this just to point out the competition that's out there, the message was delivered to me, Jeff, we think this is a fair deal, whether it's for the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl or the Las Vegas Sports Authority. And that's all I needed to hear.
Yeah, there you go.
Sometimes find a way to make it happen, right?
And they do. Jay Cicero and that group and the Sugar Bowl. So, man, I can't wait. Looking forward to showing off the dome next week. And man, Notre Dame and Georgia should be a great game. Jeff Hunley, CEO of the Allstate Sugar Bowl. Appreciate your time, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Need to take a break. Fans in the Pro, Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister. Be back after this. WWLAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister, Fans in the Pro. I want to thank the good folks at Magazine Pizza for feeding our sports talk crew on game day. Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine, dine in or delivery. The best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. That's MagazinePizza.com. And Saints on Sunday, Pelicans tonight. Pelicans last night lost at home and playing Memphis tonight, which would have been the Ja Morant and Zion Williamson show. They were 1-2 in the draft, but no Zion still. And Deuce, I know where you are with this team. You're a big fan. I like to go to the games. I mean, it is. I listened to the game last night. It's just painful. They're working their tail off. They just can't get the shots to fall. I mean, it's just tough to listen to and watch.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, you know, the injuries are one thing, but then, you know, at times there's been effort, and at times I think that you could be better at efforts. And if you listen to what Coach Willie Green has said after some of the games, starts with competing. I mean, and you have to be able to compete. And so, you know, you can say, hey, that's on the players. Hey, that's on the coaches. At some time, how many times that coach is touching the floor?
Right.
He's not. It's the players. I mean, and so at some point, I have to have a little pride in what I'm doing. I mean, I know it's a different game. You have the guaranteed contracts, and you look at the Mike Brown situation over in Sacramento. Yeah. Mike Brown, 2 years ago, yep, was the coach of the year in the NBA, gone. And they have a slow start. They felt like that they've had championship aspirations out in Sacramento. And obviously, you know, you feel kind of similar here in New Orleans, but you got to have some of the star players. And, you know, too many times that for the Pelicans, you've been in games in the fourth quarter, but some games, Mike, I think it's like 10, 12, 14 games, you're down like 15 points. And you're losing those games by 15-plus points. Where last night, and I know it was because you had a back-to-back, you waved the flag early in the fourth quarter, you know, just to say, hey, you know, we're going to regroup for tomorrow. We know we have back-to-back. And, you know, Houston played them just a couple weeks ago. But I don't think that Houston felt threatened one bit in that game last night. And so, you know, hopefully you get a healthy Zion Williamson, and, you know, Jose is still out, and Brandon Ingram is still out, and Zion is doing some 5-on-5 stuff. I think he and Jose are both, you know, and so that means they're closer to coming back. But right now the Pelicans, and I mean, this isn't a wild take, the Pelicans have the worst record in the NBA right now.
5-26.
Yeah, I mean, and so I think with the loss last night, it was Washington who you kind of surpassed. And so that's too talented of a team. That's too talented of a team. And I don't want to blame the staff. I think when you look at it, the fault has to go to both parties. That's a player issue as well as a staff issue. And so you've got to make it easier where I'm getting in sets. Where guys run freely and move freely to be able to score. And then you've got to have some effort. You got to have a little bit of pride as well on, I'm just not going to let a guy go coast to coast and show zero effort to stop them, or, you know, to compete for rebounds, et cetera.
So also Jordan Hawkins is listed as questionable tonight. Memphis. So I saw this on from Justin at Pro Pels Talk. And so this is the Pelicans' losing streaks this year. They've lost. They've had a 3-game losing streak, a 6-game losing streak, a 9-game losing streak, and an 8-game losing streak. Their winning streaks, none. Man, that is just.
Well, it's been one. You would win a game, and then you haven't been able to put back-to-back-to-back games together.
Right.
I mean, that's the problem. But the big problem is, who's available? I mean, that's the biggest problem. And then when you do start to get some of those stars back, it's just I don't have the effort. I don't have consistency, you know, and I have too many turnovers and I can't close games out, or just it's the little things that's eating this team up right now.
Yep. Charlie says that back-to-back, and that they do expect Hawkins to play tonight against Memphis. Perfect time to turn it around. Just get one. Just get one, baby. You got the Clippers in town on Monday as well. Take a break. Back after this on Fans in the Pro. Mike Austin, Deuce McAllister, Charlie Long in the booth. WLAMFM.com. Always free in the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Got some sad news to pass along. Greg Gumbel passed away today at the age of 78. Not everybody knows he was born in New Orleans. Of course, his brother, Bryant Gumbel. So, man, just a tough, tough year. That lost a courageous battle with cancer. He was 78 years old. Again, born in New Orleans. Didn't stay long. The family moved to Chicago. But, man, just a pioneer from the broadcasting standpoint. And I don't know. Did you know him at all, Deuce?
I did not know him, but obviously you followed his career.
Yeah, as did I. Thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Greg Gumbel, who passed away today. The news is coming up next in another hour of Fans in the Pro. Stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. Fans in the Pro. My co-host, Deuce McAllister. We're going to talk more college football as we kind of work our way down towards the January 20th National Championship. We'll have Roman Harper, former Saints secondary, Alabama. And we'll talk with Roman coming up in the second block here. And we'll go back to kind of wrap up a little bit where we started with the Saints and Vegas Sunday. NFC South still yet to be decided. Saints draft position, you know, somewhere in that probably 8 to 11 range. And I think, Deuce, you and I have talked about this. You know, this is the cost of being good for so many years with Sean. Right? I mean, you were just so good, and you never were really bad. So you didn't really pick high. The last time the Saints picked in the top 10 was 2008, Cedric Ellis, right? So Atlanta, since 2008, had 9 picks in the top 10. Carolina in that time frame had 9 picks in the top 10. Tampa had six in the top 10, but remember, they won, they went all in and won the Super Bowl in 20. So, I mean, it's kind of the double-edged sword of being a really good team for a long time and never really being a really bad team during the Sean years. You've just been kind of middle of the pack from a draft position.
Yeah, I think it was, what, 11 and 14 as well. Lattimore was, what, 11?
Right, 11. A lot of that. Yeah, and they've been close. You know, I'm not saying that they didn't get good players. It's just, you know, kind of a barometer. I mean, 2008 just seems like a long time ago. And Cedric Ellis, that was another one you talked about. You know, guys think they're going to come in and play like 8, 9, 10 years. And he could have. He played 5. He just retired and you know, and he, you know, after 5 years, but he was, you know, certainly capable. Just, I don't know. It's always, I guess, when you're kind of middle of the road, you're good. It's where your draft pick's going to land up.
You know what Cedric did? Went and bought living down in Cancun, down in kind of living the life a little bit. And so Big Sid, really, I mean, that was my group. That was my years. And so really good player. But like you said, you know, it's like, I'm going to play 10 years. And some guys like, nope, I got my 4 or 5 in and I'm done. And so it just happens that way. And I think the biggest thing, though, when you're picking that way, look, I'll do what Tampa did in a heartbeat. Yes, you may have been picking in the top 10 a couple of years, but if you cash in and you win a Super Bowl, it's well worth it.
Right, and not to
it
mention.
It is well worth it.
And that, nor did they, you know, bat an eye at the dead cap money that they're still paying for Tom Brady years after winning that Super Bowl. Because, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, when you push your chips in like they did and you get the Super Bowl, man, if everything else, you don't worry about it. Now, hey, the Saints were on that path to that Super Bowl that year. But you're right. You know, when you do that, and I kind of felt like, not from a draft position, because the Saints were 13-3, you know, that 18, 19, 20, 2017, those years, man, it was win now. And some, you know, it's just tough to get out of that win now mentality, right?
Well, it's tough to get out of it, but you got to win. I mean, and we all obviously know what happened for you not to even be there. But that's what happened. I mean, you've got to win. There should have been at least two more appearances by the Saints, yeah. From 11 to kind of 18, 19. There should have been at least two more appearances by the Saints in the Super Bowl, and it's disappointing. But I mean, at some time, like you said, and we're probably going through it a little bit now. It's time to kind of clean the cap up and, you know, reset yourself as a franchise, as an organization. And, you know, you know that you can do it. It's just, hey, how do we do it? How do we get there? You've got to be able to draft good players. That's one of it. And, you know, you've hit on a couple of young good players, but you still need some more pieces. And, you know, you've got to be able to hit in free agency. And it may not be long-term free agents that are with you for 6-7 years. It may be a guy that's proven himself one year or 2 years, and you know, he can help you get to where you want to go from a short-term standpoint. And, you know, but you're in the reset kind of mode at this point.
So Atlanta and Tampa, Atlanta has a couple of games. They're at Washington, and we mentioned this, I think, probably last week during the show. You know, it paid off, but it was still kind of I won't call it a gamble. It was just a gutsy move to throw Mike, you know, Penix in there, pull Kirk Cousins after a victory, even though, you know, the 9 picks, he deserved it, right? So now, though, I mean, so you get Atlanta at Washington Sunday night. Atlanta, if they win their final two, they take in the South, then they're home against Carolina. But unless Penix kind of, you know, falls backwards, you kind of feel like that's his job now.
No, it's his job. I mean, I don't think even falling backwards, there's no way. I mean, you're basically going to release Kirk Cousins, you know, this offseason because you don't want to pay him. I mean, you're already paying him, what, $96 million for 14 games? So it's not like you're going to put him back out there after what you've done to him. And, you know, in my opinion, I don't think he was just healthy. He wasn't healthy completely enough. And I think Kirk is going to get another opportunity because guess what? Atlanta's still going to be paying him. And so it'll be like the Russell Wilson aspect of it. You know, a team brings him in, you don't have to pay him. You can give him vet minimum because his former team is still kind of on the hook for some of that pay. And, you know, for Atlanta, they've got the quarterback of the future. It's just, can you win a game or two? That's kind of where they are.
That's a big one. You know, Sunday night at Washington, Jaden Daniels, you know, we saw it in person. He continued that win against Philadelphia last week was, I mean, he's just playing such good football for so young.
Yeah, and he's a tremendous player. I mean, not only against us, but to come back against Philly, I think they had, what, 4 turnovers, and, you know, you still in the game at the end, and he makes the right play, you know, the decision. And so it's going to be a interesting game. You know, that'll be one that we'll be watching with eyes on it and saying, what could have been what it's going to be in the next couple of years, you know, to go against those guys.
Right now, college football, Vanderbilt leading Georgia Tech 28-13, and Navy beat Oklahoma 21-20 as the midshipmen finished the year 10-3. Good for college football. Happy to see that. And we're going to continue our talk with college football with Roman Harper, former New Orleans Saint, part of that 2009 Super Bowl championship team, as well as the SEC network analyst. Back with Deuce and Roman after this on Fans in the Pro, WWLAMFM.com. Always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Fans in the Pro. My host, Deuce McAllister. Deuce is out on the West Coast. I'm in studio and one of my favorite guests because I love to listen to Deuce and Roman Harper. Roman Harper, who played for the Saints, of course, 11 seasons, part of the New Orleans Saints Hall of Fame. He was on the Super Bowl team, now, of course, an SEC analyst. How are you, Roman?
I'm doing well. How about you guys? How are you guys?
We are well. I'm going to ask a question, and then I'm going to toss it, let you and Deuce talk. I guess my question would be, from a college situation, as we get down to the nitty-gritty now, we're in the quarterfinals, and you look at that Sugar Bowl, Notre Dame and Georgia. Kind of take me through that game.
Well, I'm kind of breaking down Notre Dame right now. But initially, Notre Dame's defense is better than probably what most people give them credit for. And, you know, Georgia coming in with the backup quarterback, Gunnar Stockton, I know he's had some time to get adjusted with the number one guys and stuff. So we'll have to see how that outfit looks. But this is a game that I could still imagine or see Georgia winning this game purely off their defensive line, just being as stout as they are, really making it very hard for Notre Dame and Riley Leonard in that offense to kind of get started. But the offense will have to make plays for Georgia. You're going to have to go out and win this game. This Notre Dame team has won a lot of ball games. Coach Marcus Freeman is a good coach, very defensive-minded, and they play really, really stout defense, especially their secondary. They probably have 3 NFL guys in that secondary, which I normally don't give Notre Dame defensive backs a lot of credit, but I have to do that when I watch this tape. So it's going to be a tough matchup for Georgia, but, you know, I'm leaning Georgia right now just because of the experience, Georgia being in that moment. And then also, you know, Georgia's a physical team. And the thing that I see so often in these bowl games, these big playoff games that I saw last week is, you know, so often as coaches get all this idle time, they sit there and next thing you know, they start recreating the wheel. They start doing things that next thing you know that they normally don't do or they haven't been all year long. Georgia doesn't do that. Georgia knows exactly who they are. And Georgia's going to go out there and make you play to their terms.
But hold on a sec, Deuce. All right, so I'm going to step aside. But I just wanted you to know, Roman, today's a big day. I've waited almost 2 hours. I'm going to pay for it dearly on Sunday, but I'm going to toss it to the birthday boy who has the next question for you, Deuce McAllister.
Happy birthday. I knew you were a Sagittarius. I knew I loved you for a reason. I'm a Sagittarius.
You're a Sagittarius. I'm a Capricorn. You're a Sagittarius.
Oh, you already done crossed over. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm a crossover. I'm a crossover. I think it's you and Pierre, and I think Mark may be a Sagittarius.
Yeah,
I
can't Mark remember is.
Mark
too.
Is Mark
is too.
Yeah, and so it's you, Mark, and Pierre are the Sagittarius. Y'all the outcast, but you know I still love you anyway. But I appreciate the birthday wishes from both of you as well. So my question is: you talked about the matchup in the Sugar Bowl. What's a team out there, you know, and I want you to make me like them. What's a team out there outside of those two? You've got to make me like them. Because, I mean, I have one team surprise me this past, I guess, in their earlier game. And obviously that's not one of the top four. But what's a team out there? And I want you to make me like them.
For me right now, it's probably Oregon. Right now, Ohio State, I feel like everybody's going to fall in love with because we saw them play literally their best game that they've played all year long last week. And home field advantage, I think, mattered in that first round of the playoffs way more than we first initially anticipated. Tennessee was not ready for what Ohio State did. Ohio State hit some big shots early, and their zone defense was terrible. They had so many guys running wide open all day. Tennessee's one of those teams that I thought overcoached. Like, got away from it and just started to, like, hey, we're going to get them with this one. And the only people you got were yourselves. Oregon's a team that is built, constructed to win. They also have the most, the most consistent quarterback in this playoff left. That is left right now. I think Oregon has the best quarterback situation out of all of the teams. And so if it comes down to that, you trust him more. He's just, I mean, 6 years quarterback. So he's been playing a while, and he's won at all different levels, all for different teams, three different programs. And so you trust that factor of it. And then also you also trust that, like, Oregon and that staff and Phil Knight have been able to construct a bona fide roster in the NIL era, and they are built to win. They haven't lost a game all year long. They have been somewhat battle-tested. They did not look good early, but they've looked great down the stretch. They put up 38, 40-something points versus a really good Penn State defense. And so I'm seeing these things. I'm liking Oregon. I don't love the path that they have to face Ohio State, a team that they've already played. Then next, you know, they might have to play Texas. So, you know, I don't love the path, but as a team, I say that you should probably get behind that, say Oregon.
I can respect that. And Ohio State was the other team that, like you said, I mean, I thought that they really just was like, wait, who is this? You know, how did you end up in this game if you played like this the complete year? And so talent in the question.
It's because they hadn't, Deuce. It's because they hadn't played like that all year long. And it's because every team that has beaten Ohio State, they beat them up front between the guard, center, guard. I thought Tennessee would have a better time doing that. But Tennessee got down early. Then Nico Iamaleava is just not in position right now as a young freshman quarterback to go out and just win you a game like that. You know, the game had to go a completely different way for Tennessee to be on the road and win that game. It did not. The horseshoe overwhelmed them. And then next you know, Tennessee's defense just was not good and locked in. And then you see a blowout, and now everybody's picking Ohio State. I would take Oregon for all you listeners out there. Take Oregon.
Are you giving financial advice?
No, I'm not. I'm giving a pick. I'm giving picks here. I didn't say to put nothing on it. I just said, for all those out there, I would take Oregon. That's all I'm saying.
Because I was about to give your information to all those folks that when they call in mad, that Roman Harper told me, this is who he told me to take. And I put the rent up on just because Harp told me to take him. I put the rent up, and it didn't happen like that. So I was just trying to make sure. Yeah, so I'm glad you clarified that.
No doubt. I would also tell you, don't put nothing up there you ain't willing to lose. Either. I would also tell you that too.
So that is financial advice right there.
That part is financial advice. That part.
I love it. Harp, I got to ask you about the NFL and kind of where we are, things winding down, not just the Saints, but just overall. You know, you see what the Chiefs did, I think, what, in three games, 11 days, something ridiculous, and you see what Lamar was able to pull off. You know, is that the matchup, or do all things still go through Buffalo on the AFC side?
You know, man, I just feel like home field advantage for Buffalo is huge, but Kansas City's not afraid to go anywhere. Kansas City's so battle tested. I mean, they win every game by 7 points or less. Patrick Mahomes is still running around, high ankle sprain, torn, you name it. He's still just doing what he does with a more and more veteran-led team that's better offensively this year than they were last year when they won a Super Bowl. And then you look at Lamar Jackson, who everybody's going to look at the numbers and say he deserves to win the MVP.
But they're going to try and say, oh, well, he hasn't won a Super Bowl. So they're going to tell you a reason why that he shouldn't win the MVP, even though he's been flat out balling. Shout out to Derrick Henry as well, Roll Tide. And Josh Allen is playing great. His numbers are down as far as statistically, but his team's playing better. And so he's been a complete benefit of a better team effort this year, and he's also found ways to stay alive with his legs. So it's going to be great, that AFC matchup. Really, really looking forward to that, like who actually gets there. I got the Chiefs in Baltimore in that game. I just think Baltimore needs to continue to build upon what they've been doing. Lamar Jackson continues to get better and exceed all expectations. On the NFC side, I got Philly, bro. I just like what Saquon's been able to do. In a league that has kind of gone away from the running back, man, you look at Philly, and he has been the difference in their team, period. And you can say that all across the league in the NFL this year, where we always want to talk about the quarterbacks. We always want to talk about the pass game and what it is and what it isn't. Well, you know what? The teams that are playing better are the ones all with great running backs. Josh Jacobs going to Green Bay completely changed everything for those guys. Sam Darnold, I know he's not running back, but, you know, he's playing well up there in Minnesota. But I like what Green Bay is going to be able to do because of Love in the playoffs. I trust him as well. So it's just really, really cool watching that part of it. And Saquon being on my fantasy team this year really gave me a chance. And I did pretty well.
There's that financial advice again. You're going to learn.
I'm just saying. It helped. It helped. That's all I'm saying. And, you know, do we need to talk about the Saints? Because that was a butt kicking versus Green Bay last week. I knew that they would lose, but I didn't think they'd get drummed like that. And then my son was watching it with me, Deuce, and he was just like, Dad, literally something always bad happens to the Saints. And I'm like, man, this is what it's like growing up as a Saints fan right now. It's like literally something always happens, you know? We get a positive, the kid fumbles the ball out of bounds, the clock runs, we don't know the clock's running. It's like just nonstop pain. And so they got to deal with it right now. Get your face kicked in a little bit. You'll be better for it next year. So hopefully you get a good draft pick, and let's try and go win some games.
It has been pain. Pain all over. I'll put it that way.
That's been pain. I would also say this, Deuce, not trying to kick you while you're down. Quinshon Judkins, if he stays at Ole Miss, Ole Miss is in the playoffs. Dude still run the ball extremely hard for Ohio State. Just want to throw
hang up on Hart. Just hang up on it.
I'm not in control, man. We're in all different spots.
Yeah, hang up on Hart. We starting to lose you, brother. Your phone breaking up. Tell your mom and dad. Tell your mom and dad. I hope you can still hear me. Tell your mom and dad. Happy anniversary. But your phone breaking up. Your phone. Get out of Charlotte.
My Lord. All right, Roman. That's what I said. That's why I love it. I love to have you guys on. And the birthday boy. And I waited an hour and a half for you to come on just to wish him happy birthday. So,
man, that is so awesome. Thank you for allowing me to do that, man. Deuce knows he's been my guy since my rookie year in training camp where, you know, I don't know how, you know, bump it. It's okay. I mean, it's the first time I had moonshine with the adult.
That's so okay. The statute of limitations great. Is up on a lot of this stuff, man.
It was awesome. You know, right there in Jackson, man, it was awesome. So,
the moonshine college, was awesome.
Get him off the phone.
Yes, it was. I mean, we had a couple hours off, man. It was great. You got to relax. I was like, man, I'm having some moonshine with Deuce McAllister. This is awesome. So, yes.
All right. Well, there we go. I don't know. Roman, hope you had a good Christmas. Happy holidays and happy new year. Hope to see you in New Orleans soon and just continued success with the SEC Network.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'll be down there for the Sugar Bowl, so I'll see you guys soon.
Very good.
Appreciate it, Hart.
Take a break. Fans of the Pro, Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister, back after this on WWLAMFM.com. Always free in the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister. Want to thank the good folks at Magazine Pizza for feeding our sports talk crew on game day. Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine, dine in or delivery, the best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. MagazinePizza.com. Deuce, we're checking over the Oakland Art Talking text line. There was a two that I want to talk about. One came from 2544. He says, why can't y'all have a seven-second delay so we can take that Roll Tide out before Roman Harper says it? So I thought that was funny. The second one from 6818 asked Deuce if you think Patrick Mahomes has a shot or should be in the MVP conversation.
No, I don't. And it's really because I think people have kind of gotten immune to what he has been able to do. And then when you aren't winning the games that they're winning, I mean, they're winning by less than seven, you know, in some of those games and the close ones matchups. And you're figuring, look, and for me, I'm not going to go against them. But it's hard for me to see KC win. I mean, because I figure the win is going to blow the wrong way at some point, particularly when you're just winning. You're just figuring out a way to win at the end. I don't think offensively they're putting up numbers, but I don't think that they're as good as they are as they were a couple of years ago in some of those aspects. And so I figure at some point the win is going to blow the other way for them, but I'm not going against them. But I think, you know, for Patrick to be truly in that conversation, you know, they would have to – and it's weird or bad that we're even saying it is, oh, you need to win by 17 or 14 or 21 points instead of squeaking by three or seven or, you know, some of the ways that they've won games.
When you look at, you know, we've for years it's been parity. It's all we talked about within the NFL. And so the Saints at 5-10, ahead of them, and I say ahead of them, you have the Giants 2-13, Patriots 3-12, Jaguars 3-12, Cleveland 3-12, Titans 3-12, Raiders 3-12, Jets 4-11, Panthers 4-11, Bears 4-11. And Charlie and I were talking about this in the break. It appears the distance between the haves and the have-nots is greater now than ever, right? I mean, to me, it comes back probably to quarterback, right?
That's exactly where I was about to go. Out of all of those teams that you named, Jacksonville is probably the one team, and I'm still probably not 100% sold, even though they just gave him a mega contract, on Trevor Lawrence. But you name all of those teams again, right, and tell me what the quarterback situation is.
No, I can. Well, I'll go backwards this time because that's the only two. So the Bears with Caleb and the Panthers, you know, feel like they probably better than they felt earlier the year. Jets, what are they going to do? Raiders, right? They've had three quarterbacks. Titans, you know, Cleveland, Jacksonville, like you say, the Patriots, Drake May. I mean, I feel like, you know, he's been, and the Giants knew they were going to be starting over. So, yeah, but it just, you know, as and Charlie said this too, you know, 5-10 or whatever the Saints finish would have almost guaranteed them a top five, top six. You know, there's just so many. There are two teams right now currently on 10-game losing streaks. The Raiders had a 10-game losing streak but beat Jacksonville. But two teams, and the Bears are the most unbelievable. Chicago starts the year 4-2. They're on a three-game winning streak to get to 4-2, and they go into their bye week. It was an early bye week, week 7, at 4-2. And then they came out and lost 10 straight. Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, but Chicago, you know, Chicago's got better talent. Whoever takes over Chicago, you know, when you talk about a head coach, Chicago's issues is I don't ever think that the OC was truly the right pick for Caleb Williams. The head coach, OC gets fired, head coach gets fired, you know, all within after you go 4-2. Think about it. After you go 4-2, these are the moves that you make. Chicago has cap room. They've got draft picks, multiple draft picks as far as some things. They've got to fix their offensive line. But for me, Chicago should be a lot better than they are. The Panthers, trust me, they feel a lot better, a ton better.
Yeah,
knowing that they do have the answer, because I mean, some people are like, go ahead and trade Bryce Young and get something for him now. The kid can play. The kid needed some confidence, and he needed, you know, he probably needs some a little blocking. Bit more blocking. Yeah. He needs a little bit more blocking, and then you got to get him a receiver on the outside. But the kid can play. The Giants, quarterback. You got to get a quarterback. Raiders, you got to get a quarterback. You if you don't get that solved, then I don't care what other type of talent you have. Cleveland, and I don't know if you saw it. You saw Cleveland redid Deshaun's deal, and so it still ends in 2026. But I don't know where they moved guaranteed money around. That's all they did. They moved some guaranteed money around. I don't know. Like I said, I hadn't looked in it deeply, but Cleveland did something to Deshaun's deal, so it looks like he's going to be back at least for the next year, possibly 2 years. His deal expires in 26 anyway. They've got to get their quarterback situation kind of figured out there. I mean, but that in this league, if you don't have that, you normally don't have a chance.
Right. I mean, that's what to me feels to be the biggest, you know. So, and it's not a strong draft from a quarterback standpoint. I'm not saying you can't get somebody, but it's not strong and deep. But you're going to have Sam Darnold out there. You're going to have Kirk Cousins out there. But you got a lot of teams. I mean, it's just interesting to me when we talk about we had all this parity, but it just feels like if you've got, you either got a quarterback or you don't. And those teams that don't, I'm not saying that the Saints are in there. I think the Saints could be completely. They haven't had Derek for six games, right? So, but man, it just feels like the separation between the teams that do and the teams that don't is really wide.
I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you 100%, Mike. And I think, you know, if you aren't in those top three positions to be able to say, hey, look, this is our guy, you know, and whether that's Shador and, you know, who I feel like is going to the Giants or Cam Ward, then, you know, it's almost like, who do you like? Who do you like? And so if I'm not picking right there, I'm going to say, I like Sam Darnold. I like Sam Darnold, you know, to be able to lead us and to be able to say, he is the future for us. And, you know, Minnesota's in a unique situation because they can go to Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers, and that's the other team, the Jets. I don't know what the Jets are going to do.
That's what I mean. I don't either.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no clue what the Jets are going to do. But, you know, I think Minnesota, they can tag. You can tag Sam Darnold, and at least you control the rights a little outside of just letting him leave for nothing. Because you truly don't know what you have in your rookie. You like JJ, but I mean,
don't Minnesota
is
yet.
Minnesota is what's their record again? Yeah. You know, under Sam Darnold, there you go. And so I can't just discount that lightly as well. If I'm Minnesota,
take a break. Come back. Have one more segment until 6 o'clock tonight. Pelicans pregame at 6:30. Pelicans in Memphis at 7. Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister. Fans in the Pro. Back after this. Welcome back. Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister. Just for a few more minutes. Deuce is out west. Now, it's only 4 o'clock. Do you get more games today? Or are you just starting? Where are you in the basketball tournament road?
Headed after we get done. And so more games. They've got a pretty good tournament. I mean, Mike, they've got like 4 different levels, 10 different gyms. Yeah. So it's a pretty good one. And to see some of the talent out here and, you know, other teams from all over as well. It's pretty good deal.
Have you been have you been home at all? Did y'all have Christmas at home? You and I have been on the road a little bit, so I didn't know.
Yeah, no, we've been on the road too much, and so was at home for a few days, and obviously I'll fly back in the morning or tomorrow afternoon to get back to New Orleans to be able to be in the Dome, and excited about that part and, you know, intrigued to see how it all finishes up, you know, with the Saints.
How do you – I can handle a lot of things, and as we talked about with Roman, we do not give financial advice. We don't give gambling advice. We do not. We hardly ever do. But the fact that – the 3-12 Raiders coming to Caesars Superdome and are 1-point favorites. That's insulting. That's insulting to me as a Saints fan. I'm like, yeah, I can't handle it.
I saw it earlier, and you know, really, it's. I guess it's really because of the last game of how each team really played. And they're not expecting, you weren't expecting, and obviously today you found out, you know, Derek wasn't playing, and then you don't have Alvin, and it's kind of like you were saying. Where does the offense come from the Saints? That's the question. And yep. So it's always tough when a team has to play perfect to be able to produce points, but that's almost where we are with the Saints team. You have to play offensively almost perfect. You have to do things so well, or you have to hit on some explosive plays. Now, that's not perfect. That's just my guy beats your guy. But, you know, for them to go out and have, let's just call it, 5-10 play drives. That's going to be tough. That's tough. I mean, because during those 10 play drives, you're expecting to not have a holding, not to give up a sack, not to put yourself behind the chains, and then to still be able to advance to beyond the sticks to be able to pick up the first down. So you've got to put yourself, you've got to win the field position game. That's critical for this team. But you can't have negative plays. You can't put yourself in third and 15, you know, second and 25. If that's the case, it's going to be hard to win a game.
No, and that's what they haven't had is really the explosive plays, the kind of the deep passes that we've seen, you know, earlier in the year. Just hadn't been there.
Well, the one guy, Scantling, gives you that, and that's the one thing that you need.
Yeah,
the Scantling gives you that, but that's the one thing that you need more of, and you need it, you know, Alvin run, but he's not available, so I need one of my backs to be able to break some 30, some 40, some 50-yard runs, and you know, that gives you not a chance, but that gives you where you don't have to be perfect and have to depend on, you know, four 10-play drives just to be able to produce points.
You're right. Scantling is questionable. Hopefully he can get back. He missed the Green Bay game, but you're right. He has been a big play receiver. Have a great evening, my friend. Happy birthday to you. I'll see you on Sunday. Be safe, and we'll see you on Sunday morning.
Thank you.
Deuce McAllister. Thanks to Charlie Long in the booth as well. Thanks for listening, everyone. Pelicans pregame at 6:30. Pelicans in Memphis at 7 o'clock. Good night.